Hey everyone, welcome back to the Sports in the Mitten podcast. It's Sunday night, October 1st. We're already into the month of Halloween. And I am Thomas Bendit, back here for one of our Sunday night podcasts with Adam Biggers. Adam, how's everything going?
Everything's going well. Thomas, you know, Michigan had the week off for improvement week. Michigan State played Iowa. I was at that game. It's officially the start of Michigan State week. Basketball season's around the corner. I already got the email to apply for credentials at Michigan. So,
yeah,
right now it's like, yeah, I mean, football just started, and like now I'm starting to think basketball. And obviously with the huge story this past week, NCAA basketball, the recruiting and funneling money to players and things like that. And Thomas will get in that tonight a little bit. College basketball, yeah. certainly his area of expertise, and this can change a lot of things. So we'll get into that a little bit. But I want to talk Michigan State and Iowa, and obviously field any questions out there, guys. If you're watching the live stream, you can get your questions in on Twitter at AdamBiggers81. I'll read them live while we're doing this, or you can comment in the live stream, which Thomas is monitoring right now. So I guess I want to start with this. What were your impressions, Michigan State? And I'll preface it by saying this, that it was a must win for Michigan State. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That was a must win game for the Spartans, especially after getting embarrassed at home by Notre Dame. You want to open up conference season with a win, but also look who the next opponent is. So Mark D'Antonio likened it to a 12-round fight, and I think that you know, with Michigan, a gut check even, and now we're looking at Michigan, which got a gut check of its own on the road at Purdue. I guess just your thoughts watching Michigan State, what you're thinking about going into this week.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was a big win for the Spartans. I mean, as far as must win, I mean, there's not much debating. I mean, when you are they were 2-1, but I mean, I think we do have to acknowledge didn't beat the best of competition. I mean, they were 0-1 in their legit game, and Western was a solid opponent, but I mean, not at what the level Michigan State is hoping to get to. We'll just say that this year. So I mean, you come in, you get blown out by Notre Dame. I mean, we've talked about it before. You know, some of the yardage issues. Notre Dame won that game. They won it convincingly. But with Iowa, if you lose to Iowa, not only is it a big hit to your chances, you know, I don't remember where we were at preseason, but I think we were both around 6, 7, 8 wins somewhere in there. And this is a big swing game on that slate. I mean, you get this one and now it's kind of, you're working, you know, from ahead a little bit. You have a little margin for error now moving forward, at least in my opinion, to hit some of those preseason predictions. And, you know, like you were talking about, just the psychology, if you were 2-2, had lost to Notre Dame and Iowa at home, and then followed that up with a trip to Michigan, that's going to be tough. So they get a win, get the confidence back. You know, I think Iowa's a solid team this year, so I think that's a win MSU fans should be happy with. Proud of. I thought the defense played well, and that's what they're going to need on the road because, you know, you don't know how your offense can play on the road in a challenging environment. So if that defense can show up in Ann Arbor, I think the Spartans can be in the game.
You know, that a few things I guess thinking of Michigan State, and yes, I'll go back to the preseason prediction. I figured 7-5 would be kind of the full eligibility would be the goal. 7-5, I figured just given the losses, the amount of new faces. Michigan State's played like 13 true freshmen this season too, and a lot of that is out of necessity, not as where Michigan last year and this year can do that because there's depth and there's opportunity. Michigan State needs to play these young players because they need personnel. Yeah. So, yeah, all things considered, I mean, Michigan State already equaling its win total from last year. I think the trajectory for the Spartans is up. With Iowa too, this is a team that almost beat Penn State. And if you saw Penn State against Indiana, Thomas, you and I have talked about Penn State. I've been saying I like Penn State for a long time now, and I think people are realizing that. So just by connecting those dots, the way that Iowa played against Penn State, lost on the last possession, we already knew this was going to be that type of game with Michigan State. I remember on the conference call talking to Kirk Ferentz and Mark D'Antonio about it. And I mean, how many times have we seen Iowa and Michigan State go down to the wire? Mark D'Antonio was 4-4, now he's 5-4. Ferentz was 7-7 against Michigan State, now he's 7-8. The series is 23-22-2 in favor of Iowa. I mean, you can't get any more even in terms of that. And yeah, I thought Michigan State's defense last night, Joe Bocci especially, 3.5 tackles for a loss, 9 tackles. Kari Willis was really good too. He had 6 tackles and a tackle for a loss. I was really impressed with Chris Fry, and I'll talk about Chris Fry probably all week. And I remember during last week's availability, Chris Evans, Michigan running back, saying that, yeah, you know, you got to pay attention to number 23. He's coming back from last year. He's a rowdy boy or something like that. He used the word rowdy with Chris Fry. And Chris Fry yesterday with a big fumble recovery and return for, I think it was about 8 or 9 yards, something like that. Nonetheless, Michigan State's defense looked pretty solid. I mean, giving up 10 points to Iowa, I knew it was going to be a slugfest. And I do think if you're a Michigan State fan, this wasn't just a 17-10 win against Iowa. This was, I don't know if I want to call it a statement so early, but it was a validating win because people were questioning, okay, Michigan State's only played 2 MAC opponents going into Notre Dame. You know, there were a lot of people who thought Notre Dame was just going to run up the score and blow them out. I thought it would be a closer game than what it was. And by rights, it should have been. That should have been a 14-14 game at halftime. First half was competitive. It wasn't nearly – the score was a little deceptive. But then you're wondering, okay, what type of response are you going to see out of Michigan State after just getting, you know, its butt handed to itself at home? So I think if you just – across the board right there, it's check, check, check. There's no way that this is not a quality win. There's no way that it can be lessened. Look, this was a pretty good Iowa team. It really was. I mean, I think Iowa's probably a bowl team.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
You know, I mean, 6, 7, 8 wins in that range. I think if you're Michigan State, you have to feel pretty good about yourself. Like you said, this was – I don't look at it just a close win and kind of a game that we thought was going to – you know, a lot of people thought the game was going to go this way. History has shown us that. But at the end of the day, 4 games into the season, if you want something that you can kind of, you know, rest your hat on or whatever saying you want to use, if you want to use something that you can latch onto for real now, it was the Iowa game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, last year's team would not have won that game. I mean, we can all agree to that. And to me, that's the first nail in the argument. And I think you know, Michigan State's better than they were last year. You know, I know the first retort is, well, they weren't that good last year, which is true. But they're improved.
Well, they had talent. They Michigan State certainly had some talent last year, but no, it was not good.
No. But they've taken a step forward. They have some things moving in the right direction. And I think this week certainly it's going to be another test going on the road. We should note, you know, Michigan State's first road game of the year. You know, Michigan, a lot of people made jokes about Michigan not playing on the road for a long time last year. Michigan State, it worked out in their favor this year. So going on the road, and that offense is going to be put to the test, that's for sure, with Michigan's defense.
Yeah, I'm excited about this game from a couple different standpoints. And the first is, I mean, statistically, Thomas, and I tweeted this like last week because Michigan State at the time had the number 3 ranked total defense in the country. And Michigan had number 5. And Michigan fans freaked out for a second. And there's no compare. I didn't compare. I'm just saying, I know that it was against different competition in only 2 games. At that point, Michigan had played 3 games, including, you know, against Florida SEC team, neutral site, yada, yada, yada. So we already knew that was a given. I was just kind of surprised, numbers-wise, for Michigan State to be there. But now after seeing them against Notre Dame, I was kind of questioning the Spartans, you know, okay, benefiting from, you know, kind of lower tier competition. Although Western, I think Western Michigan was still a good, worthy opponent. But now you see against Iowa, just kind of like with Michigan against Purdue. You see it against a Big Ten team. You saw the offense starting to click. Okay, you could kind of see some things with Michigan State's defense. I'm not saying that the Spartans are going to be a top 10 total team, a top 10 total ranked defense all season long, but there is substance to Michigan State's defense. And I'm interested to see the test. There's a lot of matchups in this game, actually, that I'm excited about. And I mean, Chris Fry and running backs, Devin Bush and LJ Scott, Kalik Hudson and LJ Scott. I imagine that's going to be one. I mean, who knows who we're going to see on Felton Davis. And Felton Davis was looking like a superstar yesterday. And I've said this before, I think Felton is vastly underrated. We've barely seen it. He came into last night's game, Thomas, with 26 career catches. He had nine last night. He had four during the first drive for 67 yards and a touchdown. I mean, Felton Davis and Brian Lewerke are looking like what I think Michigan fans hope that John O'Korn can develop with the receiver going at this point. Michigan State doesn't rely on the tight end as much as Michigan does. And I think we already know that O'Korn to McCune and Gentry, that's going to be there. And, you know, I was waiting forward to see if Wilton Spate and DPJ, well, can we see John O'Korn and DPJ kind of do that? And I think that's not a direct comparison, but I'm saying that for Michigan State's offense, that Lewerke to Felton Davis is a similar kind of asset. I'm excited to see what Michigan State can do against a real deal defense. At the same time, this is a rivalry game. Michigan's been off, sitting idle, you know, by the time they play for 13 days, and it's a night game too. I mean, do you think there's going to be any rust with Michigan?
I don't think there's going to be much rust. Personally, I don't think so. You know, especially with the offense, assuming, I'm sure that, you know, the big question with Michigan is going to be who's the quarterback, what's happening with the offense. I think at this point we have to assume it's going to be O'Korn, at least for this game. You know, to start off with, we don't know if Spate's going to be at 100%. Obviously, Harbaugh isn't exactly very open about, you know, injuries with the media. So I think we'll have to wait and see with that aspect. But assuming, you know, maybe if Spate isn't 100%, it'll probably be O'Korn, you know, not only because he's not 100%, but also because he did play really well against Purdue in that second half. I think he got into a groove, and I think he deserves a shot. He at least deserves a shot. Again, assuming Spate can come back, that's sort of the big asterisk here. We don't know his status. We don't know how where he's going. But I think that's the big thing, you know, for Michigan, what you're looking for. And as far as the rust, I think if you're working in a new quarterback, I mean, I would be hard pressed to think that you're not going to be on your toes. But yeah, I'm very excited for this game. I think both teams still have a lot to prove. I think this is a bigger opportunity, and I don't know necessarily about everyone else, but I love that this game is at night. I'm really excited for it. I think the tailgating is going to be fantastic for everyone there. You know, maybe the crowd is going to be a bit rowdy.
It's gonna be a mess in Ann Arbor, man. That is gonna be a mess. The parking lots are opening at 12. So I mean this is I have I'm already this is a whole nother topic. I've talked to some friends. I know people are going down there and it is man.
It's going to be wild.
All I have to say is just pace yourself. It's a night game. I mean this is good. We have some questions in the live chat. A couple from Defoe and TSYU7 and both of them. Let's start with Defoe. Thanks for watching, guys. He says MSU is better, won't lay down to Michigan, but they haven't seen anything like UM defense. Better in what way, Defoe? I mean, I don't think a head-to-head comparison. I mean, I think Michigan is clearly the better team, but you know, there that doesn't necessarily. And I do expect
I think he might be
I expect
referring to
Michigan to win
last.
the game. I really do. I expect Michigan to win,
Okay.
but.
I
We can get
think
into that.
his question is referring to MSU is better than last year. I think
Oh,
that's
okay. Then yeah. Oh, yeah. Certainly, Defoe. Yes, and not only better as far as just playing wise. I mean, mentality wise, these guys really. It's a different feel. And I'm not at Michigan State every day like I am at Michigan, but I think that you can tell just by the way that they're playing, and I think that you could tell at least I can, the limited interactions I've had with Spartans players and at press conferences. And I mean, and just talking to Mark D'Antonio on the conference call, you could tell that there's a sense of stability, that things maybe mm-hmm. are getting back to, you know, normal, and it takes time. But yeah, definitely Michigan State's better than last year. TSYU7 says I'm more worried about our offense than our defense. Thomas, I'll let, are you more? Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to be worried about Michigan's defense at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, I think Michigan's defense is set up to have a big showing in this game, and that isn't necessarily because I think MSU isn't going to be able to score or anything like that. But, I mean, first road game for Michigan State. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Lewerke has ever started a road game yet for the Spartans.
That would be – that sounds correct.
Okay. I could be wrong. I know they sort of had that rotation thing for a while going there. He may have played, but I don't think he started a road game yet.
Yeah, I don't think he started.
And, you know, you're setting up with that. This is going to obviously be a big step up. I know Iowa has a solid defense, you know, a good red zone defense. But, I mean, this is a different tier. And, again, you know, we just talked about the tailgating. It's probably going to be out of control. And I think the crowd's going to be pretty juiced up. I'll put it that way.
I want to over-under on how many public intox tickets Ann Arbor police are going to write. I mean, holy crap. Well,
yeah, it's probably going to be a record for the Ann Arbor police. We'll say that much.
It is. A couple more questions here and comments real quick. Defo says John O'Korn can move the offense. I agree. TSYU7 says he looked good, man. He really did. Yeah, John looked fantastic against Purdue. TSYU7 wants to know a score prediction, Adam. I'm going to save it for later in the week. Mm-hmm. Want to just kind of see. I do think this is a close game. I think it's going to be similar to kind of a mix of what we've seen in 2015 and 16, minus, you know, the execution problems. And actually this year, it's Michigan State that has more of the execution. And I guess really there was never any questioning about Michigan's execution. I'm just thinking of the special team, you know,
yeah,
15 box punt, that kind of thing. Right now, if I did have to pick a team, like, who's more prone to commit a mistake like that, I think it would be Michigan State. Michigan State's had some fumbles this year. Even fumbled three. LJ Scott's had three alone. Fumbled last night and nearly lost that recovery. But so I'll say the score prediction. Defo says UM night game atmosphere is electric. I was there a few years back for Notre Dame. First night game will play a factor for sure. Yeah, I mean, and you know these guys are going to just be – there's Michigan and Michigan State. There's already that feeling. Yeah. Magnify it by the atmosphere of the night game, plus 115,000 drunk people. Well, okay, I'm not going to say they're all drunk. A good deal, the majority inebriated and loud at Michigan Stadium, and it already gets loud there. So,
you know, one thing
night game, all those factors, Michigan State, this is that – I know that Jim Harbaugh said the noon football, he likes it because, you know, kicking off at any other time goes against his football sensibilities. But in terms of rivalry sensibilities, this is huge right now. This is a mega, mega rivalry game, I think. And maybe I'm getting a little excited for it. But
I think two things with that. I think you bring up a good point. You know, you asked me about rust earlier this week. I think it might be a little like could Michigan be overhyped at kickoff? That wouldn't shock me. You know, we see sometimes games in these huge night games where the home team will make some mistakes early because they're just too amped up. You know, a guy overruns a route or, you know, a guy loses contain because he's trying to get a big sack to get the crowd going, stuff like that. That wouldn't surprise me. So I think maybe that's a thing to watch, but Michigan will certainly be amped up. Michigan State will certainly be amped up. You know, this is a big game on both sides. And regardless of what anyone says, we, you know, both of us certainly understand, you know, Michigan has huge games left on the schedule. Michigan State has huge games left on the schedule. But this is a huge game. It's this week. It's going to be under the lights. I think it's going to be really exciting. You know, there's huge storylines on both sides, like you were saying. I mean, can Michigan State's offense move the ball against this, you know, just destructive defense that has been doing such a good job lately, and, you know, on the road in this raucous environment. And on the other side, you know, what's going to happen with the quarterbacks for Michigan? Are they going to find some consistency? Can they carry it over from Purdue? I don't know. Theoretically, you know, Michigan State seems to have a better defense than Purdue, so you would think this is a little bit of a step up as well for the Wolverines offensively. So it should be fun. I don't know. Tighten your seatbelts, I guess.
We have a couple more questions and comments. Defo says, Adam Thomas, do you think Michigan runs for over 100 yards? They're, I believe, 23-0 when running for more than 100 under Harbaugh. I can't see either team run. If we're just going based on what we've seen out of the past game for each side, Michigan held what? Purdue had what, 30 rushing yards last night? And that's, I mean, when you're holding a team to 30 rushing yards, you're doing a pretty good job, right? Michigan State held Iowa to a total of 19, and that's factoring in, you know, that's net yards with the sacks. Akram Wadley had 17 carries for 30 yards. He averaged a yard, 1.8 yards per carry. He had a 9-yard touchdown right up the middle, you know, from the 9-yard line. Obviously, it was a 9-yard touchdown. But other than that, Akram didn't really get anything. And I mean, I was impressed with the way that Michigan State's front four. And again, I thought the linebackers played well. Joe Bacci was in there several times. Chris Fry. I was really impressed with the way that Michigan State handled the rush, Iowa's run game. And Akram Wadley is one of the best running backs in the Big Ten. Let's not forget that. So you flip it, and I mean, who's run the ball against Michigan? Not even Air Force, who ran the ball 49 times. Air Force didn't even get anything.
Not even Saquon Barkley the last 2 years.
Well, yeah, and I mean, those are different circumstances, but just in general, really, who's ran the ball against this Michigan defense? Nobody. I don't see anything changing. I think this is going to be probably a lower scoring game, and it's going to be one. The quarterback's going to win this game. I don't see the running backs. We barely saw a peep out. It was 14 carries for 28 yards for LJ Scott, and it felt like it was like a test run. Question Lewerke's game. It felt like it was a test run for LJ to get him kind of up to speed a little bit, get him ready for Michigan, because they're going to need him. But I don't think either team's going to – I would be shocked if either team ran for 100 yards.
I would
be shocked.
I'm totally with you. I don't think either team's going to run for 100. You know, I think if you are trying to envision a way you think it could happen, I think for Michigan State, it would have to be Lewerke just busting some run, some big, huge one. I mean, maybe, but to get over 100.
He's done it.
Yeah, I mean, he's busted some big ones, but still, to get overall over 100 would be tough unless it was randomly like a 60-yarder or something. But that's how Michigan State would do it if they did. But I certainly unlikely, I think. And for Michigan, I don't really see the way, you know, maybe. But it would have to be a way where – you know, maybe they got up big somehow and they were able to just pound it and start churning out yards. But I don't see that either. I think this game is going to be decided by the quarterbacks and turnovers. You know, how do those guys play and who makes the big mistake, and, you know, how can they recover from it, or how does it hit them? You know, does someone throw a pick six? Does someone fumble in a bad situation? Is there a special teams mistake from one of the sides? I don't know, but I think those are the two big things to watch.
Defo wants to know, and right at we just covered this. He says, if both teams are limited to low running yardage, do you see it? Whoever's quarterback plays better wins. And yeah, absolutely. And I think that Brian Lewerke is dangerous, and statistically he had a better day as a runner than Akram Wadley. Brian had 12 carries for 42 yards. He had a 15-yard carry too. I mean, Brian's got some wheels. He's already had a 52-yard. He had a 52-yard rush against Notre Dame. He had 61-yarder against Western Michigan. So I mean, I think it was against Western or Bowling Green, one of those two, during one of the first two games of the season. Either way, Lewerke has, and Thomas, I know some people like to pan on his arm. I think he's got a decent arm, honestly. I mean, I don't see anything. I don't see anything that just jumps out at me and says, "Wow!" But I like it. He throws a short, like throwing darts. You know what I mean? Those type of passes. I like Lewerke, like little slants and hitches and stuff. Just quick release. I think that's his strength. He does have an arm to go deep. And I think with Felton Davis, they may try that against Michigan secondary, and nobody really has against the Wolverines this year. I mean, people have tried, but no one's really had any success. And the Wolverines did pretty good, you know, shutting down David Bluff, who is arguably, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the Big Ten in terms of talent. So this is going to be a big game for Lewerke at the same time, but I think that he's different than any quarterback Michigan's faced this year, and I think that poses a threat. It's not like he's Arian Werfman of Air Force, where you know he's going to take off and run and doesn't have really that great of an arm. But Brian can keep you guessing because, yeah, he can run, and at the same time, he could throw on the run and make some plays and create. So he is different than any quarterback Michigan's faced this year.
I think I would say I think he has a couple similarities with Zaire, who came in late for Florida, but obviously an odd situation there. He was kind of playing cleanup duty for the Gators. But yeah, I think the big thing for Lewerke, you know, if you're a Michigan State fan, I think you have to hope he's getting out there. He's making Michigan's defense guess. And moreover, Michigan State has to keep him clean, because that was the thing that killed Purdue, is once he started getting hit, I mean, it was over. And you know, not to bring up painful memories, literally and figuratively,
I mean,
but that happened
last
last year.
year,
Yeah, it's a little murky.
Jabril got
Yeah,
it.
he's got to stay out of those big hits. And you know, we know Michigan wants to bring pressure. We know Bush is going to be getting in there. Gary Winovich, that's going to be key. You know, how can Michigan State, their offensive line, keep that pressure away? And how does Lewerke move with it? Because we've seen, though limited, some quarterbacks have busted some runs against Michigan's defense. So I mean, that might be a way for Michigan State to keep the offense moving. But again, it's got to keep them clean, got to keep them upright if they want to beat the Wolverines.
And you guys, we're going to get, I mean, so much more in depth with Michigan and Michigan State throughout this week. Just wanted to give a little peek into it. Those are some of the early things that I'm thinking about. And tomorrow with Jim Harbaugh's Monday press conference, I'll be down there. So in Ann Arbor, so follow me on Twitter at AdamBiggers81 for updates, and I'll have something posted the afternoon. And Thomas, I want to, before we end for the evening, I want to talk about this NCAA basketball. I mean, we saw with Rick Pitino effectively fired from Louisville. You know, we've heard all kinds of things. I mean, people are, you know, guys are talking about, you know, former players are saying how they used to be, you know, used to get approached with money or offered gifts, and you know, we're kind of seeing a lot of stuff confirmed. You know, like if you saw the movie Blue Chips, you know, I heard that kind of being thrown around a little bit this week, just as a joke. But you know, with NCAA basketball, and there's so much to talk about with in terms of the one and done rule, and you know, the how big of a involvement, you know, a lot of these shoe companies have with AAU teams and so on and so forth. And I mean, we see it in college athletics as a whole. It's not just NCAA basketball and how much influence they have. But I mean, how big of a hit, I guess, is this to just A, college basketball in general, and B, I mean, Rick Pitino, I got to believe that Rick Pitino's coaching career is finished at any
Yeah,
level.
I think for Pitino, realistically, it is finished. To start with that question, you know, the only way I think he gets back into coaching short term is he's going to have to go to the NBA, which I don't know if a team has interest in him being a head coach, and I don't know if he'd want to be an assistant. Like that's the big thing. It's you know, after you win a national championship at Louisville and you've been such a big time college coach, I don't know if you'd be okay with sort of sitting down the bench in the NBA.
But I mean, those, in all fairness, those guys probably, if they are going to do it, those guys can at least order their own escort. You know, the Pitino won't have to do, you know, Pitino won't have to have somebody do that for. I can't, I mean, Rick Pitino, I think at any, I'm almost wondering, would would an NBA team welcome him? Because, I mean, how many other guys that are proven who, you know, okay, maybe not at Rick Pitino's level. I mean, he's certainly a great coach. There's a tactically, then there's no debating that. But I think, I mean, what all does this guy have against him that's been publicized? I mean, the thing with the woman in the restaurant, right? The server, do you remember that? The server, there was some contact there. That we had the escorts with Louisville players. Now it's just, I guess what's the proper term right now? Basically, what, turning a blind eye? I mean, helping funnel or, you know, playing dumb, whatever. I mean, Rick Pitino, to me, is making John Calipari look like a choir boy right now. I mean, and I'm not I'm sorry. Maybe that's kind of, John Calipari's done some things too, and he's got a track record as well. But right now with Rick Pitino was already in that slime ball category, and then you hear this, and you're just like, man, I'm done with this guy. I can't think of a respectable NBA organization or even, you know, a college, at least Division One. I mean, we might see Rick Pitino coaching a high school team or something, or some junior college,
That's what I was going to say. I think he'd have two realistic options. Yeah, if he wants to stay in this country, is one, NBA, which I don't think he can get a head coaching job. That's my personal opinion.
I wouldn't talk to him.
So probably an assistant or some sort of front office job at the NBA, which, again, I don't know if he wants or has any interest in. I mean, the first NBA gig didn't exactly go that great. Second, I assume he's going to have some sort of show cause, most likely, from the NCAA, just like Jim Tressel did. Could be wrong. You know, obviously the NCAA has not investigated anything. If you're wondering, this is all the FBI, not the NCAA. But assuming they investigate, it seems likely or at least possible he gets some sort of show cause, which means he can't coach for a couple of years without essentially the NCAA's written permission or something to that extent. He basically, for all intents and purposes, he'd be banned. So after that, I would assume there'd probably be some mid-major program or like a junior college or something like that that would just say, hey, what the hell? Like, we're going to get some bad PR from this, but he's clearly better than any coach we can get, at least in terms of just the ability to win on the floor, regardless of what may have been required to get there. That's the only way I could see it. Otherwise, I think he's done. As far as the first question originally, you know, what does this mean for college basketball in general? I think it's a good and bad day for the sport. I guess we're a few days removed, but it's been a good and bad week for the sport. I think the good part is anybody who follows college basketball has known this is going on. This isn't surprising in the slightest. I think the only surprising thing is that the FBI decided to get involved with this. I never would have anticipated that. I mean, when you actually sit there and think it through, it makes sense why they did. But that's the part that shocks me. None of this, you know, alleged payments, the involvement of the shoe company surprises me in the slightest. And I think this has a huge, huge chance to blow up even bigger. They just subpoenaed documents from Nike EYBL, which is the big circuit where the big Nike schools usually recruit from. So I think that's going to be a big thing to watch. And I think, you know, right now, a lot of people are just, you know, they're pointing and laughing, so to speak, at Louisville or some of these schools that are look like they might get hit with something.
It sounds like this could happen anywhere, I think.
I think this has a chance to be something that does not end right now. I don't want to put numbers on it because it's so hard to do, because let's start with the fact mid-majors aren't doing this. Like they don't have the resources to do this kind of stuff. But the bigger Power Five schools, this happens at a lot of schools. And I really do wonder, this is a, you know, maybe I'm being a little hyperbolic here and a prisoner of the moment, but I really do wonder if this could lead to some permanent and fundamental change in the NCAA. I mean, before we had a coach paying a player, or a booster coming in, and you know, it was always, oh, this is a rogue coach, he's out of control, or oh, this is a rogue booster. You know, even with SMU, like, okay, yeah, the organization was kind of involved, but really this was just some bad apples, you know, messing up the system that works. This is not just a couple bad apples. This is a systematic scheme at a corporate level. This is Adidas coming in and facilitating. Well, I should say this is, according to the police or the FBI's complaint, this is a corporation, Adidas, an international corporation, coming in to essentially funnel money to college players. And it involves major college programs, head coaches, assistant coaches, people all the way down. I mean, this is deep, deep stuff. And so many people are involved. And the thing is it makes you step back and say, you know, this is, it's, I, again, I know this is very dramatic, but like, this is almost like a secret cartel sort of thing working to funnel this money around.
I mean, in a sense, you remove it from college. If you keep it for what it is, bare, but if you just take the bare bones from it and you could apply this to any, like, it's, you know, the way that some like dark underworld, you know, some kind of stuff operates. Absolutely. I mean, it's, what do you say? International corporation too. I mean, that just makes it, it's like, wow, this is serious stuff that, like you said, it's not just a couple coaches and some guys bending the rules. This is a corporation helping facilitate, you know, and for what, you know?
Yeah, and that's, I should say, you know, I shouldn't have used the word cartel because that implies violence. There's no violence here, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it's a dark underworld. This is like this conspiracy theme for all these people to work out these deals. And it makes you wonder, you know, maybe the NCAA model needs to be revisited. I mean, if we have this kind of dark underbelly developing, how is this a system that's considered functioning? And you know, the telling thing for me is, I don't know if you saw this, but the FBI actually, like, it has been reported that they hid this from the NCAA because they thought the NCAA would like report to the coaches basically and tell them, hey, you're being investigated, like, stop. And to me, that is so telling that this is from the top down. I mean, the alleged coach from Alabama who just resigned recently, which I don't want to get off track with that, but he was in a previous role with the NCAA. I mean, this is the government, the governance structure here. This is big-time college coaches. This is assistants. This is an international corporation working in here. This is the AAU. I mean, this is so many different bodies here. And to me, it just says the system's broken. It needs reform. I'm sure, you know, this is a huge, huge issue that has been talked about for countless hours. But I really do wonder if this thing blows open and you start getting, and again, I'm just saying these names generally. I don't want to imply they've done anything. But if you get a Duke or a UCLA or a Kentucky or North Carolina in this thing, I think that starts to change the topic to, okay, like, this isn't just some bad apples. This isn't just some issue. This is like what the sport is right now.
Right.
And I don't know how people like this, that this is how it works.
Yeah. I mean, and just stepping away, just myself as a college basketball fan. Yeah. You want to sit back and wonder, you want to believe that there are guys out there who are really doing it clean. Mm-hmm. And I guess, what does clean mean these days? Does clean mean you just don't get caught? Does clean mean, okay, well, you're not over the top with it, and, you know, these guys are, you know, able to kind of keep it, you know, to themselves a little bit more, you know, and you're more discreet? I mean, what exactly does clean mean? Or clean mean, look, none of this is going on, period. You know, and I don't want to mention coaches' names, you know, but just to say here locally, I mean, we've never heard anything like this with Tom Izzo's name connected. We've never heard anything like this with John Beilein's name connected. And is that, and I'm not insinuating that, I mean, they were voted by their peers, by coaches, as two of the cleanest coaches in the nation. But again, and I'm just using these guys for example, I would be absolutely shocked if I were to hear Michigan State were involved in something like this or Michigan, it would change just my whole view of the program. It changed my view as my view of Beilein as a coach, my view of Tom Izzo as a coach, because then you're like, there is really nothing even remotely, pure or clean about college basketball if guys like Izzo were Beilein. And I'm saying in theory, or again, that you mentioned like, program like North Carolina or Duke, where you would think, I mean, those are the blue bloods of college basketball. Kentucky, you don't need to do, well, maybe Kentucky is a bad example, but you don't need to do that kind of thing. And I mean, I would be absolutely floored. And then, again, how, like you mentioned, how deep does this go? And is this just, okay, well, we have four, there are four schools in this report. That's what they know right now. Or I guess, what would be their reasoning to just name four, Thomas? I mean, is that just because, okay, they have the most dirt on those four right now? I mean, that there has to be more. This is the tip of the iceberg, I think, in regard to this kind of thing in college basketball.
Yeah, I think the big question was, is this the start of a long, investigation, so to speak, or a long process? I mean, this has been developing for a long time. I mean, they used undercover agents, they've tapped phones. There's a lot that has gone into this, but this document that came out that everyone's talking about, it's the complaint, it's like the criminal charges that they're putting. Because again, that's another thing to mention here. There are people that got arrested that might go to jail as a result of this. This is
For
serious
college
stuff.
basketball recruiting, yeah, isn't one guy's fate that a person he's facing like 80 years, isn't he?
Well, I mean, like, if you think about this, think about this. These are guys, like, in every other facet of their lives, or at least we believe, these guys are upstanding citizens. They're making like 100K or more a year. The Adidas guy is certainly making way more than that. And these guys are suddenly, oh, now I'm going to be potentially in jail. These are the kind of people that are being targeted because of this horrible NCAA structure. And sorry to throw out my opinion here, but I think big reform is needed at this point. But yeah, I mean, I think the big question was, is this going to be just part one, or is this going to be ongoing? And I think when we saw that that Nike was getting subpoenaed, I think it was telling that this is not ended, this is just beginning. And if you want kind of an odd thought process, this is a little off the wall, but I'll throw this out there as well if you just want some perspective on how big this scandal could be. So Louisville effectively fired its AD and Patino last week after these allegations came out. Again, they didn't actually fire them, but effectively they were. Well, there's like a clause in Bobby Petrino, the football coach's contract, apparently, that his buyout reduces by like a couple million if the AD changes. And there are certainly a lot of jobs opening in the SEC this offseason and in the South. Like, this could lead to massive college football head coaching moves, just as a result of this like college basketball scandal. So that's how big it is. Like, this could cross sports. And it's crazy. And I certainly will be tuning in as we move forward.
Right, and all over what? Some shoes, some $100,000 payments to some kids, and I mean, it sounds like, I mean, Brian Bowen was a huge target for Michigan State. I
Oh,
know
yeah.
that Michigan was in on him for a short time too, but it sounded like, it looked like he was going to go to Arizona. That's what I thought when it came down in the end, and then bam, going to Louisville. I mean,
Oh, it was out of
and
nowhere.
Just out of nowhere, and all the dates, I mean, match up. I mean, you gotta wonder too, if you're an athlete out there and you see this kind of stuff happening, if you're a big time recruit, I mean, you have to wonder, like, okay, what does that little bit of money right now? I mean, because if you're a surefire NBA guy, you're one and done. I mean, 100 grand is nothing. I mean, that's
Yeah.
just okay, comfort money to play around with while you're in college, probably. If you're at that level of talent, I think you have to be a little more mindful and say, look, I'm not gonna potentially risk everything. I mean, you look at what could be around the corner for Brian Bowen. I mean, that's it's
Well,
unfortunate.
Well, the one thing I'd say for him is, like, I mean, I don't know how Louisville is, like, they're going to have to figure out the, well, not just Louisville, but they're going to have to figure out the eligibility of these players that are allegedly right. included into this, like, within a week or two, because the season is right around the corner. But as far as, you know, you talked about the players and, you know, what it means for them. I mean, I think even going back, and again, I hate mentioning specific names because we don't have anything that links these guys. I just want to use them as an example. But, like, how much was Ben Simmons worth to LSU for that year that he was right. there? Like, LSU was completely irrelevant in basketball. I don't care what anyone says. They were terrible before. They were completely irrelevant. Nobody went to their games. No one cared. Ben Simmons goes there. They're on ESPN every single night for an entire season. Right. And I don't know how much that would have valued that school. And I know they never made the NCAA tournament that year, but they were relevant for an entire season when they hadn't been. And the thing for me is, like, again, not saying I know anything about Ben Simmons. I'm just using him as an example because countless of other players have done the same thing. But Brian Bowen, you know, really solid recruit last year, you know, five-star, big-time prospect. He wasn't even the best prospect in his class. So it makes you wonder what some of these payments could have been. Because, come on, Brian Bowen was not the first player who received one of these checks. Probably won't be the last either, I would add. But it makes you wonder. I mean, did some of these players get half a mil, a mil? I don't know, but it seems possible to me.
And I think, too, there are probably a lot of deciding factors. I think, too, a lot of it comes down to the people that they surround themselves with. And if you have, you know, a camp and everybody wants a piece of, you know, you're Mr. Five-Star Recruit, you're one and done, everybody wants a piece of you, and all of a sudden, you know, these guys are talking to, you know, I call them handlers for lack of, you know, better reason. Or lack of a better term, you know, these guys, you know, it's almost like they're shopping the kid, you know what I mean? And yep. at that point, I mean, what is it about? And you know, we could go more into this. This is going to be developing story, guys. But we'll end it on this tonight. I mean, it's when you say, you know, how it's going to impact, you know, with coaching thing, it could cross sports too. I think overall, I mean, maybe this. Just the situation might cross sports, and hopefully it is kind of like a wake up call for guys. And it's easy for me, and it'd be easy for you to say, like, oh, hey, don't take the money, 100, you know, whatever that is, you're going to have so much more down the line. Some of these kids though, don't always, you know, do that. And for a lot of these kids, I mean, I can't say if someone shoved $100,000 in my face, if I'm a college kid and especially, you know, if I'd come from kind of meager beginnings, you know, maybe I don't come from a wealthy family or something like that. It's extremely hard. And even if it's not directly, you know, it sounds like with the shoe thing and AAU and Adidas, even if the coaches aren't directly involved, it's how can the coaches can only shield the players from, you know, if, like you mentioned, a rogue booster or somebody like that for so often, or some of these, you know, agents or whatever. Basically, they're preying on college kids. I mean, the coaches can only do so much. So I do think this is probably going to be something that's cited. And I'm sure that they talk about it as far as, you know, educating their players and everything. And, you know, basically, hey, don't take money because you can do a lot more harm than what you think that money is going to do good. So I want to thank everybody for watching tonight. I want to thank everybody who participated in the live chat. Thomas and I will have podcast Wednesday, kind of like the preview show, but you guys all have some solos throughout the week. We'll probably end up going 4 or 5 times this week, I'm sure, with Michigan and Michigan State week. So thanks everybody for watching on the Sports in the Mitten live stream. You can find us on iTunes as well, Google Play, and the FanRag Sports Blog Talk Radio channel. You can follow the podcast at Mitten Sports MI, and you can find us on Facebook. Please like and share Sports in the Mitten, and follow me on Twitter at AdamBiggers81. And I feel like that's such a lot to remember. You can follow Thomas too.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at TBendit.
BT powerhouse too is probably getting ready to get cranked up with college basketball season around the corner. Tom Izzo just had, I wasn't able to make it out there. Tom Izzo had, he met with the media Friday for the first time this season. And we'll get into a lot of stuff with Michigan State basketball, Michigan basketball. Plenty of reason on both sides to be excited. I think Michigan and Michigan State are going to be, I like the potential for Michigan State. So we'll get into that. Again, thanks everybody for watching and getting in live chat. We'll talk to you sometime this week.